Good morning. I am very happy that I can introduce my colleague from the AAPM Association, where we work together because except being a person who is representing Warsaw School of Economics, I'm also a vice president of Polish Association of Higher Business Partner, that is part of AAPM, the European Association of HR People. And today I invited here for the interview a president of AAPM, Even Bolstad from Norway. Except being a president at AAPM, he is also a managing director of HR Nord from Norway and also the board member of the World Federation of People Management Association. And he has a very broad connections around the world with many companies, with many HR professionals, also managers. And that's why I thought that it will be great to have him here to share his ideas and what he's thinking about what we are experiencing now, what regards to performance of the companies, also the effectiveness and efficiency of the individuals, and also the growth of the individuals. And this is our first meeting here. And what I would like to share with you, we'll be talking about the performance that is very crucial and important nowadays. And many companies and organizations are wondering what is the key factor to have a better performance. And they are asking themselves, is the leadership important or not important? And what is the key factor for the good leadership? What we should do to help the individuals to grow, and if they grow, the company and the organization will grow together with them. So there is a huge potential in human beings, but also a lot of challenges that we have right now. For example, we have AI, artificial intelligence, that nowadays is entering our world very, very fast, and it will change a little bit the rules that we have on the labor market, for example. So I'm going to talk with my friend Even Bolstad about these subjects, and we'll try together give you some idea what we think is the key factor and most important thing that we should consider. And now I will give the voice to my friend, Even, and I ask him to share for a few minutes his idea, what is very important when we talk about today's world, talking about the performance, talking about the growth, and talking about the leadership. So, Even, if you can start, please.
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me. It's a privilege and a pleasure. We are looking for performance. And why are we looking for performance? It's because we want to achieve some end results. And I think that performance is a really, really interesting approach to this. Because, again, what are the drivers for performance? And are they individually based? Are they based on culture? Is it about man and woman? Is it about team? Is it about organization? Is it about the interaction between technology and people? And also when it comes to collaboration because of more agile models, are we interacting within the department, within the organization, or are we a part of an ecosystem? So this is a huge, huge question, I think. And since we do not have necessarily 4 hours on this, we have to make some choices. And I would like to approach this at a core level, if you allow me, and talk about trust, because I think that is an important thing when it comes to performance, when it comes to interaction, when it comes to leadership. And if I may be so free to say employeeship, because if you are a leader without employees following you and working together, you are not a genuine leader. So you can come somewhere, some way with management, pure clinical management, but steering is not what gets you the whole way. You need to embrace leadership, and you need to embrace culture. And in fact, too much management might be do harm to leadership, and other way around. So there are a lot of balances and dilemmas there. But let's start with trust, right? I believe we have all been that little kid at some time in our life. And if you sit now smiling and saying, yes, I remember that, and look at yourself in the mirror, why are you not that little kid anymore? Probably because at some time there were no one at the other end, as the father is here. But this is interaction between people, and this little kid feel confident that someone cares and that someone will take care of him when he throws himself out of this cliff. And then just the grim realities, and then I go absolutely macro. Syria. This used to be a city. We see refugees trying to escape from something. We all have a close relation to what's going on in Ukraine, you more than many others. And I think this picture at the lower right end is from Georgia, where borders are pushed and pushed and pushed, and there's a father on the left side and a son on the right hand side. This is distrust. This is fragmentation. This is societal consequences. And I think very much of trust, it starts with yourself. It goes on building trust to your peers, in building relations. Then it's about an organizational level. And then it's about markets and society. And with an HR approach to this, I think very much of this trust is built by and within an organizational context. And if you look at the HR function, I think the HR function is so important to build trust at the societal level. And luckily, trust is good for individuals, it's good for society, and it's a really, really good business case. So I would like to show you this picture. It's from a place in Norway. It's called Myren Industrial Park. At the left-hand side there, you had a factory which once in many years ago used to have 4,000 workers or something like that. It went bankrupt. What happened to those employees? They lost their jobs because there was a transformation to a new industries and so on. Obviously, there were conflicts. Obviously, there were distrust and so on. On the right hand side, you see the same buildings from the outside, though, today, where there are media, technology, you name it. A lot of work with a lot higher potential for value creation. And what I want to illustrate is that the hurt, when you are in a transformation, as we are now, you mentioned artificial intelligence in your opening, people will be hurt. But we are on a transformation to something better. And if you do not trust the society to take care of you in that transformation, you will hesitate to be a part of that transition. If you, though, think that you will be upskilled, you will be reskilled, you will be taken care of, you will might be an ambassador and driver of change, at least to a much higher extent than those who are just fighting what is going on. At the societal level, currencies are, well, the Norwegian krona has dropped 20% or something like that. That does something to people. At the upper left side, you can see, I regard this as a consequence of decades with where people have lost hope. Rust Belt and that story, you know that. But the point is that you are not able to create a picture of a positive future as seen from the workers. Then they revolt. That is very much what we see in Europe today. People are not having a positive perspective on the future, which again takes different it might end up with different symptoms. At the lower left side, you see the yellow vest in Paris. And for me, that is very much the same. And it's about working life. It's about fighting against the system. And we see the general distrust in the society because authorities are put under pressure. Welcome to Brittany, rising star, FIFA, and also we see these consequences from some excellent cover pages or magazines. This is a picture of HR directors of Air France after having interacted with their employees. And how did we come so far from the yellow vests to this kind of cooperation? It's absolutely distrust. And if you have this kind of toxic climate within your company, you are not able at all to build performance, not in the short term perspective and not in the long term perspective. So, I mean, just some elements of trust, psychological safety. Amy Edmondson talks a lot about this, and she is doing that because it's good to people, obviously. And I think that is very much why people are focusing so much on this. But she is also clear that this is good for individuals. It's profitable and it's good for society. If you have high trust, you can decrease management and control. That means low transactional cost. And the perceived intentions of management will hopefully change. If you have a higher trust, you will be willing to invest in institutions, pay your taxes, public education, and so on, which we know is good for society and for business. I already mentioned this motivation for change. I will also pick Denmark. They talk about flexicurity, and the concept, if you Google flexicurity, you'll see that it consists of flexibility and security. You need that baseline of security in order to be willing to be flexible. And last but not least, it's on inclusion, because if we have one of the main challenges, I think, in most European countries, including Poland, including Norway, that is the participation rate. It's about getting people on board in the working life instead of early retirement or for other reasons not being a part of the active workforce. So, and again, it's a business case, it's good for individuals and it's good for society. These are just some factors. And I think better lives, more competitive economies, welfare and high profits, they come hand in hand. So why don't we just... we are different. And there are some really, really low-trust countries, and there are some extreme high-trust countries. So this is very much about culture, and it's about experiences. I think kids in every of these countries started the same way. They were the ones who threw themselves in the arms of the father or the mother or whoever, but the longer you get from who you really trust, the less willing you are willing to throw yourself. And so I think those who are a part of countries which are more low trust, they are less willing to invest in all these positive synergies. And as I showed you a picture from Air France, and you see France here as one of the countries which are not that very high trust. And Poland, you are more in the middle here. I come from an extreme high trust society, and we are close to naive, I guess. This is not breakdown with some other statistics, but you see the Nordics are really, really high, while Bulgaria, Serbia are at the lower end. And if you in Norway go out on the street and ask, do you think that this stranger you are approaching on the street wishes you well? 8 out of 10 Norwegians would say yes. If you ask the same question in Sofia, 8 out of 10 would say no. And if you have that approach into working life, that will obviously have influence on how you treat people and how you expect to be treated. This is, in fact, a totally different statistics, but with the same, very much the same rankings. How willing are you to pay your taxes and invest in public sector? Those countries with low trust systematically are less willing to invest in public sector than those with high trust. This is democracy at one scale and trust at the other. You can see here that Poland is at the lower left side. And just think on which benefits would have come if you could have more trust and more democracy. And the question is, of course, where does it start? Does it start with democracy or does it start with trust? But that's another discussion. I don't think we will have space for that one here. This is highly interesting, I think. You are not on this for obvious reasons, since you have your history from 1945 and onwards. But there is a systematic correlation between countries with high economic equality and those who are on the high trust side. That means that if you do not trust people, that by itself spurs inequality. And if you have inequality, that is probably generating a less wealthy nation. So it comes so well together. We see how this, only some public figures, we all know them, how people get into positions in more low trust societies, who are forming shaping their attitudes on how we relate to each other. So I go from macro to micro, but it all is a part of culture and what drives what, that is a big discussion. We see people right hand side, that's Hungary. We see this fantastic leader up the right corner, and we see women from Iran in the lower left. Something's going on, and transparency is obviously a part of this. I mentioned Iran. In my roles, I travel around a bit, and some years ago, I had the privilege of being invited to University of Tehran, which is the picture here. So you can see me on the stage to the biggest HR conference they have. For me, it was a fantastic learning experience, especially since I talked about exactly the same thing I talk about now. And what my approach to this was that do to others as you want them to do to yourself. That is a part of the religion I grew up with. The Christian one, but exactly the same phrase is embedded in every religion around the world. So this is not unique for Christianity. It's just unique for those who believe in other religions. It's something we share. And it's very much about reciprocity. Do good to others as you want them to do to you. And I will just end with this little chap. And it's for a reason. Because you see how they line up working for each other, which is that is the core of this picture. And they do good because they know it's good for the other chap. But they also expect the same to come back next time they turn around. And that is how they, as a small community, work together. And my question is, when we have all these performance management programs, which basically is, many of them are based on distrust, because you don't expect people to wish to do good for the society they are part of. You need to steer it. You put management into leadership, internal motivation, external motivation. So, and I don't think that, I mean, running these associations the more engineering way, if you are doing that, you will never, ever get to the top scale, at the top of the ranking when it comes to profit and wealthy societies. And neither will you be at the top end of the scale when it comes to best place to work or best country to live in. Because if you want to climb the ladder the whole way up, individual and so on, then you need to build on trust. You need to build a culture. That also goes to more agile organizational principles. If you want to interact effectively between companies, between departments, you cannot do that by steering alone. Yes, you need steering, you need management, but you need to build on trust relations and wishing each other well. And the perception of something good happening to you if you act in the interest of others. So I think I will stop there.
Great.
Yeah. Where do you go from here?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for sharing general ideas that you have regarding how the trust is a key factor for the general performance. And you showed me and showed us the macro perspective that we know from the perspective of the nations, and also the micro perspective, because each organization should think about it. How we can measure the trust? This is the question. If we can measure the trust, but of course we have some surveys, we have some ideas regarding how we can measure, but I believe that we can measure it also through the performance, general performance of the teams, of the companies, and also we can see it on the faces of the people. What do you think about it? What is your?
Yeah, we can do a rough assessment on see it on the faces of other, and you can, I mean, all these trust indexes, they might be used at the company level too. But the question is, do you trust your co-workers? Do you trust your boss? Very often, people rank these questions higher than do you trust the company as such, and it's further one step down. Do you trust the headquarter, which is in some other country? Do you trust your politicians? Do you trust that someone will take care of you when you grow old? So I mean, the more distant you are, the lower trust you very often have. And I think most of us have high trust to those we are closest to. Are we in fact believing that there is a system outside of the system, which is also part of this trust community? And that, I think, is very much where the differences come up. And I think that in more agile associations, organizations, where does this organization stop and the next start? I mean, then suddenly we are, we cannot regulate everything with contracts. In fact, contracts might, from time to time, harm cooperation and flexibility. So service level agreements don't bring you the whole way. You need to build partnerships, and if you are able to create these clusters of trust, then you have much higher potential. Just one thing on that note, Cosa Nostrum, the mafia, is basically a construction based on high trust in a small community. It's an in-group. It's us. In contrast to the out-group, right? That is what is the strength within the Cosa Nostra. That there is such a defined out-group, which you do not trust. So that is a paradox in this, that if you do not trust those who are around you, you tend to be even closer to those you are near.
Correct. I totally agree with you. And we can see nowadays, I can say that the trust is even more needed. But even before, when we were talking about the management styles or management in general, and we talked about delegation, how to delegate people, we were saying, okay, you can delegate if you have trust in your team. Because exactly. if you have no trust in your team, in your team members, then you will be very reluctant as a manager to delegate. So even many years ago, we already could see how it's important and how it's influencing the performance of the organization, because the manager should delegate. If he or she is not delegating, basically he or she is not a manager. So the trust is the base for the delegating any job to our people. If we are leaders, it's even more important, because we not only delegate, but we should also motivate, what you said, and how to motivate people if they do not really trust in us.
And that's the constant dilemma in this, because every nation, every company, every team need management. You need some, you don't want anarchy, right? So you need some kind of, and management is also important for learning, because you want to find best practice and so on, right? But those are, if you are very clear that you do management for those reasons and have some kind of trust to build on, the perceived intention of your management will not harm your leadership. But if I as a CEO of the Norwegian HR Association suddenly have a president who starts monitoring me, and I perceive that she is not trusting me, my behavior would change overnight, because I would be more careful, more transactional. But I have this idea that I have and a shared picture. Oh, let's call it the North Star. Association. My job.
Evan, can you repeat two last sentences, because we had some internet interruption. So two last sentences.
Yeah. Okay. I as managing director of HR Norway, I have a president, and if I had this thought that she was starting to do management on me, and I deliberately say do management on me, because she didn't trust me, that would immediately make me behave differently. Because my perception, as it has been until now, is that we have a shared picture of where we are going, and that she believes that I am always working in the interest of the company, and that we, can I say, share a North Star, but we are very much working on the North Star and not that much on KPIs. And if I perceived that she was starting to distrust me, my behavior would change. And I do not think that would be to the benefit of the company. So it's very much about perception. And I think it's Kotler famously said that most companies are overmanaged and underled, because we have these wonderful managerial systems. And as a paradox, I might say that if you become a high-level manager, you have very often become a high-level manager because you were very good on first-level management. You were in control. That's your, could I say, right foot. That's the one you play always, your default foot when you play football, right? It's management. And suddenly you come in a position where you cannot manage, you cannot control everything. And you are blocking, you are showing distrust and so on. And the paradox is that the qualities you were selected on, becoming a high-level manager, being good on management, that might in fact be the most critical derailer at a later stage in your career, because you have to let loose. You have to let loose, but you have to be extremely clear on the North Star. What is the North Star? Where should we go? But then you have to let loose on how you get there. Also, because autonomy is a part of motivating your employees. But then you need to have the trust that when you sum up, you need to be tight summing up. And if, again, you are transactional or do not trust the intentions of this tightening up at the end, you will start political plays, right? You'll be playing politically games and not necessarily honest. So I think Norwegian company we are very fond of is called Telenor. They summarize this as tight, loose, tight. Tight on the North Star, loose on execution, and tight on follow-up for learning purposes and consequences, right? But if you do not have this trust base to build on, you'll fail. As easy as that. If you are Googling a team of teams, that's a fantastic book. I once, many years ago, I was a Naval Academy graduate, and I spent many years in the armed forces, and that is the classical command and control association, right, too, alongside with the church. But this teams of teams book is in fact about experiencing the new environment or environment of war in Afghanistan. It doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work. So how can you make these interactions based on clear North Star, tight, semi-autonomous groups, sharing info? If you are not willing to share, it will collapse. And transparency. So it's all linked up to, in fact, these things we have been talking about. If you are not willing to share, and that happens in a low trust environment, the whole system will collapse. And it's about speed, agility, and cost of transactions. So I think if we think about trust as something which has to do with the individual, yeah, we want everyone to trust us, right? And we want to trust each other. But it's also about lowering costs. It's about increasing speed, increasing the quality of interactions, and increasing the agility. So there is a long way from talking about performance to what we are talking about now. But at the same time, this is for me at the core, and it's very much about leadership, developing more leadership, and necessary management. The necessary level of management, but do not think that you can replace leadership with management. That is the classic one, and especially if you live in a low trust environment. So, and I mean, the if we can say that, me as a Norwegian and from a part of the Nordic, if we have some kind of competitive advantage, that's the good old phrase from the 80s, that is in fact trust. I think the reason why some countries came through COVID in a good way and others struggled more is has a lot to do with trust. Do you trust your authorities when they say go home? We did. We didn't do it because of command control, but because we believed in those people telling us that, that they wished us well. And if you don't have that, so it's, it has implications on every level and every part of societal life. So for me, this is very much the core of how we shall also approach this new world of artificial intelligence and so on, which is, and I must then again give reference to Mir's mechanical industry, where those people obviously were scared because they were told, you will not have a job. And they did not have a safety net. And that was a tragedy for them and their close family. But I think that their grandchildren thank them for that, because they are now knowledge workers in these new industries. So, and if we are not able to let loose of what we have today, that will in fact be a blocker for transforming into this new phase. But if you and I are told to say to go into a dark tunnel with a perception of risk that there will come a train against us or we will fall through the ground or whatever, we will not go. But if you have an idea that you are entering a gate to something new where you will be supported, helped, reskilling, upskilling, my God, that is the agenda of the companies. It's because you need the competence, but it's also about reciprocity. Then I think we'll have a totally different approach.
Correct. I would like to tell you and our viewers that if we talk about this trust, I can see it as a kind of a glue that can glue us together as a teams, mm-hmm. as an organizations. And it is this invisible glue that what this glue is doing for me is if this glue is there in a right level, then we have the good flow of the information. Because what you said, okay, performance, we need to share, we need to cooperate. And what does it mean? It means that we just send and receive information from each other. And if we have this glue putting us together in a right amount, it gives us this ability to send and receive information very easily. And that's why the performance, because I'm going to performance now, our performance as a team, for example, is much better because we work more efficiently.
Exactly.
And so that was my idea when you were talking about this glue putting us together. So that's why I wanted to share my point of view. And you also mentioned about the new things coming. You mentioned about the COVID and how it influenced us, also influenced on the basis of the trust and some groups, some leaders we trust more, some groups, some leaders we do not trust so much. Now we have another challenge. We can even say, I don't know if you heard that, there is a saying in English, may you live in interesting times. Some of people saying that it is expression that is claimed to be translation from the traditional Chinese curse. However, it's not confirmed. What does it mean? Why it is a curse, some people saying? Because interesting times, meaning the times when there is a lot of things going on, a lot of things happening. So we do not have the peaceful time that we just sit and relax, but we have to reply to new things that are happening around us. And I can see that we have now these interesting times. For me, it's a good starting point for a changes. And the changes are speeding up. You said about AI, artificial intelligence, that I also mentioned in the beginning when we started. And there is a again, the question about the trust, but because for me, should I trust the artificial intelligence? This is the first question. Okay, so not only trust between us as human beings, but now we have some machine learning systems that are giving us some information. So this is first thing. The second thing is that should we trust each other regarding the use of the artificial intelligence? Because, for example, I know that there are some surveys saying which are giving us the information that some people being on a home offices all the time, especially for the past few years when it started with the COVID-19, and they could in a very good manner use this automatization and first steps of the artificial intelligence in their work. Now they can even do two jobs at the same time. But is it okay or not okay? Talking about the trust, because some of them saying that, okay, I'm not going to tell my my company that I'm doing it, because probably they will fire me even though I'm doing my job. I'm delivering what is needed. So there are a lot of questions appearing regarding the artificial intelligence and use of it. What do you think regarding this point that I shared?
How much time do we have? 1 or 2 hours?
I think
this is very long.
But
this is so,
we have like 15 minutes, I believe.
The question is, the answer I don't think is yes or no, right or wrong. It's
correct.
It's a heck of a lot of dilemmas. And consideration on this. And as individuals, we are not kept all the same. But think, okay, you mentioned COVID. If you go back to McGregor, American thinker, I think we then speak about 1967, 68 or something like that. Theory X and theory Y, if that rings some bells for those of us who received our management education in some decades ago. That's the guy. What did he talk about? He talked about trust-based approach, or the non-trust approach, right?
Correct.
And how, if you have a default theory X, you would go that way, and you would communicate something, not only with your words. One little phrase I love is, I see what you say. But through your positive spiral of positive working environment, or the opposite way. If you distrust, you are perceived distrusting. And remember, back to management and so on. This is the 60s. And we have known this for decades, that this is smart to do. Why haven't we done it? Suddenly, COVID came and took away our shackles. and threw us back to our home offices. And surprise, surprise, most people can be trusted. That's shocking to someone.
Shocking.
Although they received the same theory, exam theory, why education 3 decades ago, but they have behaved as distrusting managers. I would say not say that everything is good or everything bad, so on, and people are different then, and but most people can be trusted. In these times of war, I, as I said, I have a military background, and we have a very interesting and a very good chief of defense in Norway, and he once he tells a story that when he became chief of the army some years ago, he went around and was asked, "General, what do you want me to report on or something like that?" And his answer was, "What do you think it's important for me to know?" And that's totally different. If you have a trust-based relation, they will in fact pick this, 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 and this, and not report on those very often negatively perceived KPIs. But they knew what was important for him because they had the same North Star. And I think these principles are really, really important to embrace in daily behavior. But we're talking about AI. It's a paradox that those countries where people say, yeah, fair enough, AI is good, let's go for that, those are the most authoritarian ones. Those with the most democratic traditions, they are more, on the one hand side, on the other hand side, there are pros and cons, there are dilemmas. And the problem with it's a huge opportunity, but it's also a problem because the speed is so high. And first you have things happening, then there is nothing. Then there is literature, theory, and so on. Then there is nothing. Then there is nothing. And then comes the regulations. There was a Norwegian professor called Bente Løvendal who used that picture once. And the problem is that the speed is so high and regulations are so far beyond and behind. And that is, in fact, what I see as the problem, that we are regulating for by fear and for the past. So, and this is so international driven that you can do something within EU, you can do less within the national level. But China is the one, Chinese are the ones who are mostly embracing artificial intelligence. But that is also the country with face recognition, giving you credits on your behavior, and that gives you privileges. I mean, oh, well, we don't want that kind of society, do we, any of us? And who are tweaking the algorithms? I drive an old Tesla, but at its time, it was extremely advanced. It's 5 or 6 years now, I think. But I know that I trust it when it comes to when am I out of electricity and when is estimated time of arrival. It's like this. But when more advanced versions are integrated, if you have a dilemma, this is the classical one. Should you in a situation choose, and you have to choose one out of two. Should you choose to run over this old lady with a wheelchair, or do you want to take this young mother with having a child? In some countries, you will respect for the elderly and so on, and you will tweak the algorithms that way. In another society, the opposite way around. We don't know who are tweaking the algorithms. And if things are developing by itself, we have these stories when it comes to recruitment, when it comes to where biases are put on speed, right? And suddenly you have a really, really ugly screening on recruitment where you don't exactly embrace diversity, to put it mildly. So there are so many dilemmas on this. In times of war, I'm not sure whether I like a society where artificial intelligence not only is embedded in delivering weapons, but also on choosing targets, right? Then you are very much back to a science fiction movie from the 1990s or something like that. So it's yes, no, what, pop. And we know that someone will have this struggle on this because this might be the solution when it comes to caring for elderly because of taking care of the demographic shift. I'm an optimist when it comes to the green shift, when it comes to that it have a huge impact and so on. But when it comes to payroll managers, administrative workers, recruitment administration as just one part of this, and a small one, lawyers, and so on, who are earning really good money on basically reading up from manuscripts. These functions we will get rid of, if I may use that word, these functions. And hopefully the same will happen to these individuals and at least the children, which happened to these production workers at Mirens Mekaniske. So there's a there's a guy from Austria, died many years ago. He was called Schumpeter. You can Google that. And he talked about creative destruction. And his point was that in order to make something grow, you have to destruct all things. And what we see now is a shift. It's creative destruction on steroids. But again, we have so many needs in our society. So I'm not afraid that we will run out of work. But the work will change and some jobs will also go.
Great. Thank you for sharing, Evan, because I believe that we can make a good use of this new technology. Of course, it's just a tool, and we know that we can use the tool different ways. That's what you said. There are pros and cons, but I would say we should more focus on positive sides. Of course, taking into account that some people may use it in a not proper way, according to the morality or the rules that we share as human beings. But talking about AI, I believe, because I am related to the work with the huge amount of information and time management, for example. So from my perspective is that this tool can help us a lot with the huge amounts of the information that we already produced as a human beings. And instead of losing a lot of time of searching, for example, looking for some information, we can work with this tool and it will help us to take better decisions, to be faster, and maybe to have more time for better activities, what I believe better activities, more creative activities for our societies, for the whole humanity. So I believe that we will make a good use of this tool. And talking about HR, because we both are from HR, we know that the kind of work that some people are doing is so much related to the information reading and dealing with the information that they are reading and delivering some ideas that artificial intelligence can help, but also it will force them to change. So, for example, to upscale or rescale their present job descriptions, or they have to just to make a big jump. So for our HR community, it's a kind of a challenge, I believe, that we should prepare managers, we should maybe prepare ourselves to help those people
Certainly.
To go through this change with happy faces and to see the better world. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. And if you look through history, development has, be honest, change might create pain, right?
Correct.
But at the end of the day, you are historically facing a better outcome for yourself. And I hopefully, with good leadership, and what scares me is very much related to some of those pictures I showed at the start of our discussion of leaders I do not trust. Do they wish the best for me? And I think that if you are a leader or whatever, if you have some kind of responsibility, accountability in the future, and we have a lot of studies showing that those competencies which are in demand is very much the combination of STEM skills, right? Engineering, technology, and so on. And soft skills. Yes, we need priests, very soft skills. They are probably the ones who are really steering clear of this. Therapists and so on. They will not be that much affected. But it's the combination. It's the ambiguous or ambidextrous competencies, it's called. And you need to be, as a football player, you need to be good on right hand, left hand, and at the same time being able to use your head to be a proper Lewandowski, right? And you need to be able to work on a team base together with people who are different than you, that bring to the table different skills, and who are willing to share trust. We come back to that.
So
I think that is the culture we should look for and together take responsibility and create.
Okay, so to sum up, because we are running out of time for our interview, I would like to ask you from the perspective of the young people who are, for example, right now entering the labor market. So they are just finishing, for example, Warsaw School of Economics, they are bachelor or... and they are going to work somewhere to find a job. So what will be your... recommendation for key values? We already talked about that, but to just sum up, key values they should look for and they should also develop themselves to be better on their career path.
Always say yes to an opportunity. That is, I think, the most important thing. Actively try to learn, and learning doesn't necessarily, as you might think when you are a student, happen as a student. It happens in daily life. Most of our learning is in within a working context. It's learning by learning from suppliers, new colleagues, new tasks, and all that. So actively, and then it also means moving to new positions. You might be good on one subject and by that be stimulated into some kind of silo. And at some level, you will stop because these silos, they are not that high. But if you are maneuvering into finance sharper, you will have a much broader platform, which might help you if your ambition is to go the whole way up, as it often is for business school students. At the same time, I once learned from a priest that the road to heaven isn't necessarily vertical, he said. And I think that was a wonderful statement from a priest. But it's about learning. And when I say take the opportunities, I would also say to those boys, men, whatever they define themselves as, and girls, women, that this is very much also about equal opportunity. And if you are creating a home together with a partner of whatever gender, you need to support each other. If one of them, especially then women tend to do that, say that it's a time for me to step aside and take care of and so on, which very often follows traditional values, then challenge, if you are the man in such a position, in such a relation, challenge her and say that I wish you well and I will do my part at home base to make it possible for you to develop yourself through these years to avoid stagnation. So I think also choosing your right partner, that's not necessarily the standard advice for career management, but I think choosing your own partner, and that's especially goes for the women, I think that is very, very important. If you have a traditional man who expects him to be the focal point of the world, that will be a problem for you in the long run, and you might not see it when you are in the middle of it. That is the most progressive thing I would say today as a man aged 59, I think.
Thank you very much. So about cooperation, basically, and finding a right partner, we can also say, try to find a right partner in business, meaning the company that you can trust, meaning the people inside and your team and your leader, your manager. Great. I believe we just touched the very, very important subject, very wide subject that we can have even a conference of today's conference regarding it. But for today, we have to finish. Thank you very much, Evan, for your time. And I hope we can maybe have another meeting, another interview in some time. We'll see. And talking to you, Evan Bolstedt, president of AIPM, board member of World Federation People Management Association and managing director of HR Norge from Norway. And Dominik Ludwiczyński from Warsaw School of Economics, Institute of Management, and also the Association, HR Business Association in Poland. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and thank you for giving me this opportunity. Please, those who are listening, just click up to me on LinkedIn. And I would also say that you mentioned EAPM, which is an umbrella association for 34 HR associations all around Europe. My motto is sharing is caring. And that means that if you trust the other national associations, that they wish you well, you are sharing. And by implementing that culture within such a community, because that it's not a command and control system, not at all. But if you are sharing, you get in your face that you receive a lot back. So for me, that is just a case study on exactly what we are talking about. And for me, as president of the EAPM, trying to build that kind of culture is, in fact, maybe the most important focus point for building the performance of the organization as such and doing good to each other. So that is the case study of the day. But thank you very much for joining and for letting me join you. And best of luck. Let's keep in touch.
Thank you.